Excellent.
It happens once every 4 or 5 months. Mike, I'd like to start off today with a question. I've come across some people lately that are going up through the veil, but I'm kind of trying to get my head around it because I don't really see how it's going up. I don't know if it should be. They're going to the moon, the planets like Saturn and that, and visiting these cities there and stuff like that. And that's not even going when I think about it anyway, logically, it's not really going up to heaven. It's really in this atmosphere. And in a way, it would seem to me like it's going to and fro. And I don't even know why you'd want to visit the moon or Saturn or anything else. And I don't know if you have any experience in this area or whatever, but I'm kind of unsettled about it.
Okay. I personally have been taken out into... stop that thing. I've been taken out into the stars, solar system, to see the Earth, and I've been taken out to the edge of the galaxy and seen some things being burst and things like that. So it is possible because it is a realm that we have governmental authority over, and therefore, you know, we can see it. In my very first encounters in heaven, the Holy Spirit took me out to another solar system, another star system, but there was a point to it. You know, at the time it was like, wow, look at this, you know. And you know, and when I questioned, well, what was the point for that, he said, well, did you notice? And I was like, did I notice what? You know, I was pretty much taken up with this amazing picture of this planet with revolving rings going around it at different angles. And he said, did you notice the journey? And I was saying, no. He said, well, look again. So on the way back, I noticed that there was no darkness. It was just like complete, everything was light. So what he was showing me was what happened before the fall. So he was showing me what happened before Satan fell, that there was no darkness out in the galaxies, in the universe. There was no darkness in the way that happened when the third of the stars or the angels fell with Satan. Then it created darkness as an absence of light, rather than the darkness that God had created for his mysteries to be hidden in and for him to be in the cloud of darkness. So there's nothing wrong with darkness itself, but when light is removed, then it becomes a problem. So I have experienced many of those things, and you know, we will have to establish rulership of those dimensions again. Now, I'm not sure when people are engaging, or you're talking about people engaging the moon or different things, are they engaging in this dimension? So they would be moving to and fro, but is that something we should be seeking to do, or is that something we're mandated to do? If we're mandated to do it and we're authorized to establish some sort of government in a particular area, then fine, then do it. If people are actually talking about engaging the spiritual dimensions that are associated with those places, and what I mean by that is there is more to the planets than we can see, and just like there's more to our planet than we can see dimensionally. So the atmosphere is our dimensional realms. Dimensional spiritual realms. Under the Earth, where Satan's trophy room and where Tartarus is, there are dimensional spiritual realms, not just physical ones. So you can engage on the surface a place, but you're engaging the spiritual realms associated with that place. And that may well have a purpose or a function to it, depending on whether you're mandated to do anything there. You know, I've access Satan's trophy room. That is a realm which we describe as under the earth, but we're not really talking about a physical under the earth, but a spiritual realm which is described as being under the earth. So, you know, it's interesting. I personally don't have any desire to go to anything unless I'm led by my spirit to go there. I certainly wouldn't be taking people into any sort of encounter like that unless it was a clearly authorized thing to do, and there would have to be a clear governmental purpose for it. But I wouldn't dismiss some of the things from a surface view of them unless I had a clear understanding of what it was that they were doing or what they were authorized to do. You know, heavenly joy rides are more akin to being tethered to the earth realm than engaging the heavenly realm. And I think a few weeks ago we talked about the tethering stuff and being untethered from the control of moon, stars, and planetary systems and constellational systems, having some connection to our soul and therefore anchoring us or tethering us to that dimension. Having now listened to Ian's teaching on it and having explored it somewhat myself, I believe that there are many, many visions of heaven that have been recorded in YouTube videos and books and various things are actually the outer courts rather than the realms of heaven themselves. And I believe that there are people who will be in the outer courts because they fail to fulfill their destiny, as you get in the five foolish virgins, and you get those who Jesus said, "Depart from me, I don't know you." Although they prophesied and they cast out demons and they'd done this and that and for the kingdom, they weren't fulfilling their destiny, so he didn't recognize them from the point of their eternal image that he created them to outwork. But they end up in the outer courts. Now, I've listened to a couple of people and I've read a couple of connections to this, in that what some of the people are seeing when they engage heaven seems to be a play park or a cosmic pizza parlor, and I think that those are reflections of people in the outer courts who are there because they're still tethered to their earthly memories. And so they want heaven to look like earth rather than earth to look like heaven. And some of the descriptions that people have had, I bear no resonance with at all, simply because I've had no encounters like that or seen things like that. And in discussion with a few people and listening to some things, it seems that what are being described there are people's earthly representation of heaven, that it's just going to be this wonderful playground, rather than the place of destiny to outwork our governmental perspective as sons. They're still basically operating in the wood, hay, and stubble of their destiny, which has not yet been subjected to the judgment seat of Christ, rather than the gold, silver, and precious stones of the outworking of the fulfillment of their destiny. And so I think there are questions over whether people who are in the outer courts will have any engagement to be able to change. And I think people are viewing that maybe differently. And I did talk to someone last week in one of the alpha groups who has had an engagement with a tunnel and with people coming through that tunnel in earthly clothes, in which she seems to be directing them when they come through, and praying for them. And I'm sort of like, okay, that's interesting. Not had that encounter. Certainly trust that she's experienced that and seen that. I don't know whether that is a potential thing that people may do to free people from that earthly tether, even on the other side of the veil. I don't know. But certainly, I think there's a huge difference in engaging the realms of heaven and the legislation and jurisdiction of kingship, sonship, lordship, than having a fun time in the playground, which I've never seen or experienced personally myself. And it doesn't seem that that will be a governmental sphere of sonship. But I don't know. That's just some of the things I've been thinking about and looking to engage, having heard a number of people talk about things recently. So, yeah. Okay. All right. Is there anything sort of else particular on that? I mean, obviously you got some concerns maybe that people are just playing games rather than engaging in anything. Yeah, maybe it's somewhat superficial. I don't know.
I have a little experience akin to that. I didn't quite understand it at the time. I was ascending with a group of people, and I was just in between sleep and wake because it was late at night. And I found myself in sort of, we were going to Wisdom's house, and then I found myself in the middle of what would look like, you know, what you see in a scientific picture with all these balls around me. I know there were galaxies and just spheres around me, so there were worlds and planets, and I was huge and I could just reach out and touch them like that. I was just in the middle of them. They were all around me and I could just reach out and touch them. But that, as I said, it was late at night, and I didn't have any further clarity on that, and I hadn't gone back there or tried to go back there. But I didn't go on my own. I was just in that twilight state. That's where I found myself. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. I just went
back. Yeah. Yeah, I think there are various encounters that we have that are forerunners, experiences, and prime us for understanding how we'll interact with those particular spheres of government, whether they are galaxies or things. I mean, some of the engagement with the Chancellor's houses, you know, certainly lends to a whole dimensional difference in our governmental spheres in the age to come and in what's coming. So there may well be lots of encounters that sort of lead to that, and our spirit engages something even when we're not cognitively aware, and then we have a remembrance of that which triggers. Once our spirit has engaged something, then it can be re-triggered by subsequent encounters which bring more clarity to it. You know, so I wouldn't dismiss any of those things. It's just some things I put on the back burner, and I'm just like, okay, I've received something of an encounter. I don't get any sense of urgency or any sense of leading in my spirit to go and engage that now, but in the future that may well happen. And you know, it has happened to me in the past, having had many encounters. You know, my spirit does trigger sometimes an engagement, you know, and some of the places I've been in the realms of heaven and some of the things I've engaged there all of a sudden become an urgency or a moving to engage it, you know, and my spirit just is part of leading that now, rather than it being, well, I was just taken there, you know, my spirit does direct. Now, sometimes you do get just encounters. You know, I was engaged in worship yesterday morning, and we had a, you know, I was sharing about waterfalls and the river of life and the different rivers that flow out of heaven and things like that. You know, and I found myself engaging in it and going deeper into it, and ended up going, you know, deeper than I'd been before, which then took me to an engagement with, you know, one of the Chancellor's houses, and, you know, and a quest and an engagement with Enoch, and it was a journey. You know, I went on a journey, you know, behind the waterfall to engage, you know, Enoch, and then I went, you know, to various places just as I was led to do it. Well, it was almost like, you know, I just flowed with it and ended up engaging, and was given some fairly directive instructions about what I need to be preparing in the next, you know, month ready for an engagement with the Galactic Council and producing a case to release something, which, you know, I'm not going to go into now, but, you know, but I know that I now have some work to do. You know, I've been given an authorization and a mandate. Now I need to establish legislation that enables me to outwork that, you know. But I've been working on those things for the last few months to understand how. You know, so sometimes then you just get a prompt, like, I need to do that now, rather than, okay, this is something which is interesting, but I feel no urgency. I felt a very, you know, I ended up on my knees, and I ended up, you know, with a sword, a fiery sword, which was like, okay, you know, I'm not going to argue this time. I usually argue with fiery swords. Not really keen on them. But actually, this time it was like, no, I know what this is for, and I know I need to respond to it. So, yeah. Okay.
Mike, I wasn't gonna even plan to ask this question, but I'm just so curious. When you present your case to the Galactic Council, which you're going to be doing,
yeah,
have you ever seen the results of the case being presented and I guess being approved? And I guess the second question I have, if I understand it right, on the Galactic Council there's 70 people that sit on, is that correct? On the Earth? Mm. There's only 70 people on Earth on the Galactic Council?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, I have been there, and I've seen the function of it a couple of times, and I've been called to go there previously, and I didn't respond, but I do have maybe a different view from others. I don't know. I know Ian Clayton talked about that there were people there who didn't know that they're actually there, but they were people who had a Galactic Council function but weren't there. Yeah, contempt of court. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there were extenuating circumstances of why I didn't go when I was called to go, but in a sense, it was like when I looked there, it was like there were people there who I recognized as being alive on Earth. And I honestly believe that it should be, the Galactic Council should be made up of those who are serving the purpose of God in their generation. It's our generation that we are serving and therefore responsible for those who are operating at that high level. I saw what looked like those that weren't just, you know, or looked like people were caretaking or occupying seats on that government because people weren't. Now, that may be just because those people who have been called there have not responded and have not cognitively understood and therefore are not operating beyond the veil to do it, and therefore the council is made up of those who are representing them, maybe men in white linen, maybe some of the ancient ones. They look different. I know Ian Clayton, you know, he's not mentioned it a lot, but I did hear him talk about in one session that there were people who were assigned to that in this generation, but because they hadn't taken that up in a sense of going beyond the veil, their authorization will be removed when they die. And so he was saying in the next 10 years, we're going to see many, many what we would call the fathers of sort of our generation actually pass on. And I guess we've seen some of that even in the last week. Now, I'm just quoting what he said. I'm not saying that that's my own personal view. I don't know. It potentially would make sense. But I've seen all 70 seats filled, but they certainly didn't appear to be filled by people who are all alive on the earth now occupying that role. So you know, that's my experience of it. In terms of presenting a case, you need to be authorized to present a case. You need a governmental sphere that you're presenting the case on behalf of, and you need to have a good case. You know, and the first 70 days are 70 days for judgment, and we must be very clear that we're going to look for verdicts to be passed in favor of, not punishment to be heaped out. So when we're talking about judgment, we're talking about a favorable verdict or a non-favorable verdict, depending on how the case is presented and what the judgment's made. Now, I want to go and stand on behalf of to see a favorable verdict so that we can then put things in place that would bring change and transformation. Will that have an effect on those who are not aligned with that verdict? Yeah, I would imagine so. But, of course, the purpose of that is to call people to respond. So, you know, it's trials often that cause people to change and be transformed. So the challenge of God removing something to cause people to recognize the removal and then respond accordingly may be one of the outworkings of what we do. But you have to, I believe, you do need to present a case based on God's eternal purpose, based on the prophetic outworkings of the purpose of God, based on blueprints, that then you can go and present a case to have a verdict passed and then authorization given. You know, I don't know enough about it, or I haven't done it, to know what the effects are. I know of others who've talked about the effects have held back the enemy's hand, stopped him bringing devastation to the earth, stopping world wars, stopping terrorism, various things which have been the effect of people standing in that place and presenting a case and then having the authorization released to be able to do that. I don't have personal experience of that, so I can't really comment other than what I've heard other people say. I do believe that we're going to have to get used to it. I certainly want to engage in the next four sessions of that court in some way with a case for judgment, justice, grace and mercy. But you can only release those things once authorized according to a case being presented to the court and being accepted. I don't think you can just turn up at the Galactic Court Council and sort of say, okay, can you pour out a little bit of mercy over our town, or, you know, or we would really need some grace right now. You know, you can go to the throne of grace if you need personal mercy or grace. You know, that's where we get personal resource for our situations in our lives, from the throne of grace. We're talking about the Galactic Council here, who are responsible for the affairs of our universe, and, you know, particularly for our planet, to bring our planet back into its rightful place in the center of God's purposes in heaven, so that it can then again then begin to be the center that brings everything back into balance and order. So, yeah. Okay. Any other questions or things you want to share?
Mike, do you think that past moves of God, like the Citizen Street or the Welsh Revival, somehow were tied into the Galactic Council? In other words, because probably everything that happens on Earth had to happen, all things result as a result of man's petition to God, as the Bible says. Mm. All things are wrought by current supplication. I'm just thinking, that's just a higher level.
Yeah. I would, in a sense, I would say that if you look at the history of revivals, you see a history there of people interceding for periods of time. You know, I can think of the Hebridean revival in the UK in the, I think, late 40s with Duncan Edwards, I think it was, there were a group of women who were praying and praying and praying and calling out and calling out and calling out, and, you know, God responded to that. You know, you have the whole thing of the bowls of prayers being filled, and when they're ready, you know, and overflowing, they're poured out into response. Yeah, I guess in some way there have been people who have been operating in these levels of authority, or they're the angelic host who have been responsible for those things when we have not been mature enough, have responded to that type of intercession. And again, I think I can remember Ian Clayton talking about going to see a sort of revival type situation and wondering how they managed to open up an everlasting door to see this glory poured out. And it was like people were doing and saying and operating in the right authority, even though they didn't realize that they had a heavenly engagement. So they were moving in authority. They were declaring, decreeing, which was responded to by heaven, even though they weren't aware that they were ministering, if you like, on a mountain or in a heavenly sphere, but God still responded. I mean, can you imagine what it will be like when we are operating in those heavenly spheres and opening up everlasting doors and releasing what there is to be released? I mean, it's going to be very different. Now, God is a gracious God, and He responds to the desires of people's hearts that align with His. So if there's an alignment that people have with His eternal purpose, then He is going to, in a sense, overrule that which might be a limit in what they've been doing in a heavenly way to release His heavenly will onto the earth, you know, in spite of our lack of engagement in heaven. And I think revivals are potentially a result of those interactions with the purposes of God and people praying and catching the heart of God, then decreeing or declaring or prophesying what will come about. And I guess you could look at Azusa Street, and you can look back in, you know, Cane Ridge revivals and various other revival settings, certainly in the UK, you know, the Wesleyan revival and those type of things, which have their roots in people engaging with the heart of God, then being obedient, and God responding and releasing an outpouring of His Spirit to facilitate that through the everlasting doors. Most of the time, those everlasting doors get closed because of sin, because of disunity, because the enemy gets in to block off, because of our human weaknesses and failings, usually in relational connections that go on in those type of things. And you've had experience of that in Canada with the Airport Vineyard and the response of the Vineyard movement to throw them out. You have the same thing go on down in Pensacola, where there was this separation and various things went on which are not good, which basically stopped what was going on, because the enemy caused division and separation between people. That's what he will always try and do. So we have to be, you know, aware and make sure we do not give room for the enemy in what's coming, to ensure that we have a constant flow and we maintain those everlasting doors open and flowing. But there are times and seasons that we have to be aware of. We have to be aware of the alignment of things in the heavens for those times and seasons, so that we don't look to do something out of compassion rather than out of God's desire and His will and purpose. therefore, you know, being authorized and mandated to do something must be out of the will and purpose of God, not just out of the desires of our own heart. And, you know, we would all desire everlasting doors to be poured out over our neighborhood, our town, our city, our region. But there are times and seasons which have to be set. And I think this is where the legislation comes in, where we will start to set some of those times and seasons and begin to align the houses of heaven to outwork and release those, and the government of God will be aligned for it. And as we mature in sonship, then I think more and more will we begin to legislate rather than just operate according to legislation. But then that's a maturing process of coming into having charge of the courts and having access to stand in the assemblies of God. Definitely I would say a connection. I don't know the specifics, but I would see that there's plenty of ways in which God would, you know, want people to respond. We're just coming into a whole different order now with the order of Melchizedek, that the veil is open and that people are realizing that this covenant with death can be broken and we don't need to die to go and engage heaven, that it's our a right to access the realms of heaven now as children of God. You know, Jesus says our forerunner after the order of Melchizedek has now invited us to come into the Holy of Holies on because he has opened the way through the veil, which essentially comes through the cross, his flesh, whichever way you want to describe it, so that we can actually take our positions in heaven. So, yeah.
Mike, yeah. So if a place has experienced revival and they have decided, maybe not intentionally, to stay in that place where revival has happened or what has been released and has not moved on or continue to grow, do you think that everlasting door could be closed there after it has been opened and what has been poured out, you know, has gone on for some time?
Yeah. I mean, I think we will see that in establishing cities of refuge, which will be, you know, some people call them revival centers or apostolic refuel centers or apostolic hubs, all sorts of different names being bandied around right now, because this is a now topic of being prepared for what's coming in this way. I believe that there are going to be different sorts of cities of refuge, some based on unblocking ancient wells. That's a description, in a sense, of, you know, what happened with Abraham and Isaac generationally, to, you know, unblock the ancient wells, to dig new wells, and then Jacob and the next generation also dug wells. So there was a generational thing there that the purpose was to have wells. Now, whether I think they're basically the same thing as having an everlasting door open or unblocking an ancient well, it's really a connection to the realm of heaven. So I think there will be those places that have that in the ground that can be reopened, if you like. It's like what I've seen happen and what I've seen visions happening is new wells being dug. They're not wells of water, they're wells of oil. And the angels that are responsible for regions who are beginning to engage in these digging of new wells set fire to them. And they become pillars of fire. There are walls of fire around those areas, and that fire engages right up into the realm of heaven and goes through the atmosphere. And so it purifies the atmosphere over that area. And then when it joins with other wells, and some of those will be wells that are need to be unblocked, again, same thing. Essentially, it's like the fire is put to those wells and they become walls of fire and eventually forming a canopy of fire to purify the atmosphere. so that we begin to take back the atmosphere, and then ultimately I believe before Jesus returns that the river of life, which at the moment is engaging on the earth through the gateway of first love in our lives, so the rivers of living water flowing from us, actually is being dammed up. I have seen it. Ian Clayton described it as nirvana, a place called nirvana, which is a desolate place in the atmosphere of the earth where the river of life, you know, most people follow the river of life upstream and engage with the waterfalls and the garden of God. If you follow it downstream, and I have followed it downstream, then I've seen it as flowing into the atmosphere of the earth, but it's dammed, unable to come onto the earth. But I believe in the generation that will see Jesus return, that dam will be broken when the atmosphere of the earth is reclaimed, and that river will flow right through the atmosphere of the earth and then will come down onto the earth. So there's a lot to do for that to be ready, but I believe that's what we're going to see when we start to see cities of refuge established, operating as, you know, embassies of God's kingdom on earth as it is in heaven, operating under a different jurisdiction, you know, completely operating with heavenly government, having the royal priesthood and apostolic and prophetic connection to, you know, bring the government of God into those areas. That's what I would see coming, you know. And if we are in places where there has been revivals, then it's our responsibility to make sure we legislate and remove any legal access that the enemy has to continue blocking that, whether there's history, whether there's things that went on we need to remove, then we need to be willing to, again, present a case. Because the enemy will present a case of accusation to why revival will not be ongoing or will have stopped or whether it won't be restarted in an area, and therefore we must make sure we find what those accusations are and deal with them so that we can prepare. Then, you know, the verdict is likely to be found in our favor much, much easier when there's accusations are dealt with and the legal rights the enemy's had are removed. So, yeah.
That's good. That does answer a lot right there, what you said. Yeah, that's good.
Okay, excellent.
Mike, so in services, let's say, where there's sometimes where there's just like just opens up in the service and people are touched and you hear people talking about their goal, everything's happening, and then next week it goes back to where it was. There's almost like the gate, there's like the everlasting gate opens up and then closes again. And really what needs to happen is if people are operating under the old system, where they're operating within that, but they need to go up, I think you're saying, and legislate to keep it open.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, God inhabits the praises of his people, so when we begin to praise, we begin to abandon worship to him. Angels respond to that, portals get open. The presence of God and the angelic manifests, but often when the praise and the worship stops, then we go back to normal. You know, that is repeated Sunday after Sunday in many places because people don't know how to maintain it. And sometimes things will have happened during the week, sometimes things would have happened that haven't been dealt with, would actually mean sometimes the meetings feel really heavy, and it feels in a negative sense actually heaven doesn't seem to be open here, and this has been hard work today, and it actually seems to be, you know, closed, and that's usually because things have been happened which we've not dealt with and not realized to be able to deal with them. And so it's really important that we engage with the angels of each ecclesia, that the leaders there, the benches of three, you know, they see the angel clear the atmosphere, open up the everlasting doors to ensure that you know, we are overlapping with heaven and earth, that there is the angelic presence, that God will begin to draw back the veil, if you like, between the two realms, so that it's like we've got heaven on earth. Literally, we have overlapping of spiritual dimensions, in which that's what it feels like. It's like we are in the courts of God. It's like we are there while we're standing in worship and praise. Now, you have to have people who know what they're doing to begin to do that. You know, that's some of what I do every week. You know, I sort of send out the angel of the church. You know, I release my angel to clear the heavens, to deal with it. Therefore, you need the bench of seven to make sure the environment is right and there's no access that the enemy's had through sin or relational issues that are ongoing that haven't been dealt with. All that stuff affects the spiritual atmosphere. You know, and we have to teach people to come to give, not to come to get. Because the key to seeing heaven released and engaging heaven is in an atmosphere of giving, because that's trade. You are giving, trading worship for more of his presence. And so that true motive of our hearts in just releasing abandoned worship because God is worthy, that he responds to, and the angelic realm responds to that. Where you have a whole lot of selfish people who are coming saying, feed me, feed me, feed me, sucking out the atmosphere of the earth, of the atmosphere in the room, rather than filling it. Because when we fill it, we multiply it exponentially, 1 to 1,000 to 10,000. You know, it's like there's an exponential multiplication. But where you get immature people who just come, it's like, oh, I need my Sunday fix. I've had such a bad week, such a hard week. I just need God's presence, rather than, hey, in spite of my bad week, I'm going to worship and praise and make a sacrifice of praise, which God will respond to and release blessing upon. There's a whole gamut of different things that can be going on in our ecclesia gatherings, in our corporate meetings, which can affect the atmosphere one way or another. And we need to have those who are taking responsibility for that atmosphere, and to administer that atmosphere in heaven, and to make sure that they're out working the administration of that on earth, dealing with things and not just glossing things over or ignoring things or letting things go, but that they take responsibility to establish the kingdom. And that means bringing government, and that means challenging the status quo of situations to change. And that means challenging people to change. You know, we must mature and we must grow. If we're still babies, you know, trying to get milk, then we're not going to see what God wants for mature believers who are acting in that mature way of engaging God. And even for those who don't necessarily know how to step into the realms of heaven, at least they're worshiping in a way which brings an atmosphere of heaven and the angelic atmosphere around us as we do it. But there are not that many communities that are worshiping like that. And those that are amazing places. And, you know, but that's what we want to see more and more established. Mature. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really something that you should say that, because just yesterday I was having a conversation about what you're saying there, and that we experienced that yesterday. I was in worship leading, and a part of the team, and I did lead out in something in one song and so forth, and for me, usually what I would do, I would step in myself and invite the angels and so forth, and invite the Tasmanian angels, and I've seen that really really shifts and change the atmosphere. But you know, if when you look out to the congregation, but five persons are so are engaging approximately, or trying to engage at least, and everyone else is like, you know, in some kind of slumber place. And it's really amazing that we could feel the the magnitude and the power of his presence, and you could look over and see one person in such engagement of his presence, and then all around, there are those who sit looking, they're looking lost, and it's really, really sad, you know, to see that. So I've been thinking a lot about that and how to continue to be a gateway to shift that whole thing there. Yeah.
I mean, in a sense, you have those who model it, but you have to. I think there has to be a challenge that goes forth to challenge it, to challenge people's perception of worship and engagement and why they come to corporately gather together, to mature people. Most people's experience is subjective. So their experience, one person can be in bliss and ecstasy and someone else can feel miserable and down in the same environment and atmosphere because of their personal connection to it. Because their soul is ruling rather than their spirit. And so they're affected by the atmosphere of their soul, therefore their thoughts and intentions and the motives of their heart and their personal sadness, emotions, rule and govern rather than the spirit. And we have to, I think, encourage people to worship, praise God as with a sacrifice that costs. You know, we may feel miserable and down, but actually is God worthy of praise? And if our reaction is, well, I don't feel like it, well, then we're not going to encounter him in a way which we want. Now, ultimately, we want places where there is an objective, manifest presence of the glory of God. Whether it's a cloud, whether it's a thing. And I'm not talking about the gold dust and things like that, which are just signs and wonders. I'm talking about the manifest presence of the glory of God. If God manifested his presence with people who are responding selfishly and immaturely as they are now, they would be absolutely crisped. You know, they could not cope with that glory, with the thoughts and intentions and the motives of their heart as they are now. So God is staying his hand, and he's looking for communities who are engaging heaven and opening up heaven so that he can come in a manifest, objective way. And it's like heaven and earth are effectively just completely in overlap. You know, they're completely superimposed on one another, and it's like we're there, he's here, and you don't know. You know, whether you're in the body, out of the body, it's just an absolute, real, total encounter that will be, you know, objective for everybody. But I don't believe that God would release that at this present time when there are people who are so immature and are coming to gatherings purely to be fed or to receive or get ministry or just because they've got so many needs rather than making a sacrifice of praise and coming because they want to worship and engage God's presence and honor him and you know, bring glory to him. Yeah. So we're in a transition. And those that begin to engage beyond the veil and begin to administrate it there, God will begin to manifest his glory increasingly. Those who choose to operate on the other side of the veil, God's presence will be withdrawn bit by bit. And I wonder whether some people will be like Samson and not realizing that the anointing is no longer present and will carry on thinking they can just do whatever they did before in their own strength, without God's strength. And that's the danger. That's exactly what they did when Jesus left the temple, and he left it desolate, which is what he did when he walked out and the presence of God left it. They carried on doing their daily this, that, and the other. Even after he whipped them and drove them out, they still went back and reestablished the old order. And then when the temple veil was torn in two, they went and restored it. You know, they carried on doing the old things in the old way, even when the new had been established. And ultimately, you know, it wasn't until AD 70 that God gave them a generation in which to turn from that old way. And the old way was, you know, the presence of God being in a temple, in a city, in a nation. Now the presence of God is in all people, in all nations, and it's not a central place, it's in us, because we are the new wineskin of his presence. But he gave them a generation, and then he removed the old system completely. Even though the glory had left it, and there was no spirit left in it, they still continued to operate it. And God eventually destroyed the temple in AD 70 and removed the whole old covenant system, and it was completely obsolete, as it says in Hebrews. You know, it became totally obsolete, even though they tried to continue operating it. Now, it would be so sad if ministries which have been at the forefront of what God has been doing but have not necessarily accepted the call to enter within the veil, the same thing happens, you know. But that's what the judgment is. You know, does God recognize on earth that which is a shadow of the blueprint of heaven or not? And those things he recognizes, he will begin to fill. And those things he doesn't recognize, he will leave. Challenge. Challenging period of time coming up.
Yes, you said when you talk about the old wineskin there, just made me remember we had an encounter together, which is very profound, and we had no idea that somebody would experience something like that. So what we really experienced is the wine room, and there were lots and lots of bottles and bottles and bottles and rows of wine. Like, you could smell the place, you know, the whole atmosphere was thick with this intoxication. It was beautiful, and even the wood and everything, it was very beautiful. And winding stairs down, and then there was this long pole in the middle, and off of this pole there was this kind of circular kind of like a sonar kind of thing, just being going outward, and then up deep from it in the pole, there was this almost looked like a fireworks. I tried to find something to post it on the internet, just coming up and out, like corks popping off and being released out into the earth. And then at the bottom in front of that, there were these kegs. And each keg, there was a name written, it was a label written on it. So we had like love and joy and restore and rest. And then I looked at one of them and I'm thinking, there must be one. Say that again. Which was the other one?
Purity.
Purity, right? And I was looking at and I was thinking, there must be one for authority. And when I looked, the authority was marked humility. It was strange. And it was so intoxicating that we drank from each one of these kegs. And the one we store, what we got from that is the restoration of all things. That's why I pulled that out and posted that after I saw your post. I said, yeah, because it's the restoration, because that wine stuck. Right? And so there was quite a revelation from that, right, Bill? Where you know, what is happening as a restoration of all things, where it wouldn't be like past revivals that, you know, it came and then it died out, but this will stick because we're moving in a different day, in a different time. Where's the restoration of all? Yes, Bill, you're gonna.
I was gonna say there's a real important distinction here that the yes. bottles were of old saints.
Yeah.
That's what the came to drink. The kegs were new wine being.
Yes, so I was gonna say that.
It was fermenting away. The pole yeah. was a resonance going down, and I took a yes. just a flash. I saw the earth, and it was just like resonating down the earth. But yes. the new wine was going stronger and stronger and being yes. made. And so what we did is we went in there and we started putting our heads under each of the five
yes.
wine. Oh yeah, well, and that's right. And Debbie, before we even saw the keg, Debbie smelled. It was like a leather. leather, and what it was the new wine skins.
May I just add one other thing, too? It was such a full experience because while we were drinking, then another part of it opened up, and there was a lounge and a colonnade with all these old saints, and we started engaging with them. We could go and sit with them, and there was like a big party, not a big party, but, you know, they were all there mulling around, talking to each other. We could engage with any of them that we wanted to. I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, I mean, awesome. I mean, it's an amazing thing to see, as you say, all the corks popping and all the ancient mantles and all the historic generational heritage being released, vintage wine, if you like, being released at our disposal to support and to enable us to be able to function in those things. But I do love the whole picture of, you know, the kegs and the new wine. You know, because in a sense, it's like each of our lives will also become a bottle. You know, as we embrace that new wine ourselves, we become a bottle. And we're part of that cloud of witnesses, you know. In a sense, we may not have died, and let's hope we don't die. In the sense, let's look to live until we see the restoration of all things. But actually, we become part of it because we mature, and we become a witness and a testimony to these things. So I think that's awesome. And just the different labels. Yeah, you know, I love the humility thing for leadership because that's exactly what it is. You know, we are a foundation for people to build on. Not something to lord it over people. Now, true humility knows its authority and identity and does not have to prove it or demonstrate it. It's who we are. And God is looking for foundations that are, in a sense, Jesus described it as gentle and humble in heart. And that's who he was in the fullness of his authority, gentle and humble in heart. But absolutely having the authority of the kingdom and legions of angels at his disposal and everything else, but was gentle and humble in heart. Now, gentleness is not wishy-washy meekness in a sense of being a doormat. It's being a strong foundation that releases others, you know. Being humble is not, oh, I'm nothing and nobody. No, it's saying, I am a son of God. I am authorized to administer the kingdom, but I do that to release others. I don't do it to promote myself or give myself a position. I already know my position. Therefore, my position is foundational for others to be built upon, and therefore they stand on me as a leader. You know, and that's what true servant leadership is. We allow people to stand on our shoulders so they can reach higher. You know, we are a foundation for them to engage higher and come into their destiny and the fulfillment of it. So I love that whole wine room, you know, encounter and illustration of it. It's awesome. And we need to go to drink that wine, particularly that associated with those that are around our blueprints. And assigned to our blueprints, you know, and let's see what is the new wine that's going to be released. You know, as we establish cities of refuge, you know, we will have our own distilleries, if you like, of new wine, of new truth, of new authority, of new power, that we will be producing, you know, connected, of course, to the flow that comes out of heaven. But, you know, pretty awesome encounters there. Excellent.
Yeah, definitely. So we did go and release that out, that new wine to release, so that others could encounter the sound of it, as it were. You know. So yeah. So that was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do like the, you know, the frequency. I mean, that's really what is being released. There is a frequency that carries the revelation, the call, the drawing within that frequency for us to resonate with. And that frequency is going out, you know, and it's calling people to come to this, to the new wine. You know, it's calling people. Just like the early church, you know, these men were not drunk as you suppose, but they were filled with the wine of the Spirit. You know, they were filled with the joy and peace and love and the overflowing sense of God's presence, which just drew people to it, drew people to the sound. You know, they encountered God overflowing in their midst, and that's what we're, you know, looking to see established. Places where people will be drawn to the light, to the sound, whichever illustration you might want to use, but they will be drawn. See, I personally believe when we're going to see the cities of refuge established, that they will be storehouses for the harvest of harvesters. We will not need to employ evangelistic techniques. We will issue the sound, the light will shine, the mountain will be raised above all the other hills and sources, and people will be drawn to come. They will come saying, teach us. We won't have to go in that way. There will be a going to establish discipling the nations. Because I think people, you know, have taken Matthew 28 and, you know, will make disciples in all nations. It actually doesn't say that. It says go and disciple the nations, you know, which is a totally different concept of bringing government to the nations, of bringing the nations back into governmental order of God's purpose. You know, so I believe, you know, evangelism, you know, will be not the techniques of it will be redundant in cities of refuge. And ultimately, when we see the river of life poured out, it will be redundant because people will be drawn to the river. They will drink from that source of life as it flows down, you know. But we're in transition, so we're still we're still transitioning, but, you know, we're on the journey and we're in the process, so, yeah.
Wasn't it Philly who came to, as when he came to a city, wasn't it Philly who came to a city, and when he came to the city, it was like the whole atmosphere shifted, and people, factories, and people just come under the conviction of the Holy Spirit and get saved. So I think he probably was a forerunner in that sort of thing, just because of what he engaged in. So when he came, he didn't really have to say a word when he came, but things just shifted. It's like he came with an entourage of heaven. You know, the doors were open when he came there. Because I guess there was, I think he was a priest, and he used to spend that amount of time praying, interceding before Finney came to a city. Is that it? Yeah,
absolutely. He carried an atmosphere of heaven with him. And even when the train went through the station, people would fall on their knees and repent. And a lot of those are forerunner experiences that you learn to see what went on in them, but actually now we need to outwork those experiences in government. You know, now we need to, those are the things we need to see released out of heaven. And I believe that our cities of refuge will carry such a frequency of heaven within them, such light, such wines, everything you're describing, that they will draw people to come. You know, but that does mean that each person who lives in that environment needs to be a channel of God's glory and his presence and the shadow that comes out of our lives for healing and, you know, all those things that, you know, happened to Peter. Again, forerunner experiences of what the fullness of that will be. Because everything in the past has just been former rain. And we're going to see the latter rain. You know, everything in the past has been former glory, and we're going to see latter glory. And the glory of the house will be greater than the former. You know, so we have an expectation that things are going to be very different. But we have to be very different ourselves. So we need to be transformed. We need to be renewed. We need to come into our sonship, you know, in terms of genetically. We need to make sure we get rid of all the rubbish and junk in our lives so that we can radiate and be transfigured to bring that glory through us, so that we will do some of the things that others did. Shine like light, you know, levitate in the air, fly. You know, you get look at those saints of old and look at some of their wine, and it's pretty amazing stuff. You know, now God is going to roll that into our generation and pour it out. You know, but he's looking for those who are going to cooperate with him. You know, so yeah.
I just have a comment, Mike. I think it was very significant that.